Would you put some words on, present yourself actually, who you are, your some of your background, but and what you're doing recent years and now. Just a
Okay,
few
perfect.
descriptive words. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So, in summary, my recent background involves operational leadership, and also currently I'm in the health and safety field, looking at investigation and learning from serious events. So, if I go back a few years, from leadership roles at various levels in an energy organization, an oil and gas wing of an energy organization. I've led at site level, at field level, managed a few key organizational changes, managed some kind of technical support on a global level, and currently, as I mentioned, investigating and learning from serious HSE incidents, with a focus to improving organizational learning. From a corporate level.
So there's a huge responsibility on your shoulders, Ian.
Yeah, so in terms of it's important to be right, and I think it comes back to some of the factors that drive me anyway, is even in my operational leadership days, I always had a focus on being able to substantiate and give the context of each direction or decision made, really. So the current role is very wide and varied, of course. But the essence really is in how do we translate that to improvements elsewhere in the organization, which is a challenge. The people think the investigation is a challenge, and it can be. It often is. You're leading different teams for every event. But ultimately, the challenge is to prevent recurrence, or more importantly, actually, is recognize the underlying elements that lead to those events elsewhere, rather than just fix the problem. So yes, it's quite wide and varied. You mentioned the words responsibility. I don't see it as that. I think my inquisitive nature and approach of substantiating each decision helps with that process. So
Really,
in leadership terms, sorry to digress, in leadership terms, you know, from having a very coming from an operational field management kind of background, where you've got a very structured number of direct reports, a number of secondary reports, and quite a wide span of control, it's quite interesting to now be operating solo effectively, but be the leader for a variety of different investigations, whereby each team is very different. So you're starting with a new team for every deployment. So I find that interesting, actually. It's yeah, and it's because it's not just about having a process and deploying, it's about building relationships every time. So it's quite often we talk about human factors, we talk about the factors that influence human behavior, but ultimately it often comes back to organizational elements. So it's often quite useful to have some operational currency when we are presenting leadership failures in a given business unit, because we have, you know, it's good to have that common language to determine what, why, and where these failures occurred.
When are you worried?
Well, I wouldn't say worried. I'd say where is the there's a phase of discomfort,
Okay.
and for me, one of the enablers is to recognize within yourself that that's part of the process. So you need to be a little uncomfortable. I mean, one of the things you need to investigate well is experience, of course, but it can also be your biggest hurdle. So you know, early in most events, You will, I will spend a period of discounting my own immediate assumptions so that I can be systematic about it. And so it's demonstrably systematic, but also just to challenge myself to not jump to conclusions that I've witnessed elsewhere.
So you accept to be in a not knowing position for a while.
Yeah, and actually that's essential. So, it sounds too heavy to say embrace the uncertainty, but that's an invariable part of the process. And if in a similar role you're not experiencing that, then you could probably go deeper. So because to be really satisfied that you've got underneath every element, you need to keep digging and not just be satisfied with the early findings. Coming back to leading a team that have just assembled for that specific event that you've maybe never worked with before, maybe you have. One of the elements is leading the team to be self-critical and to challenge everything. And, you know, we bring technical expertise often in because of the flavor of the event. One of the first things is to ensure that they are not just applying experience and expertise, but challenging themselves on it.
What personal competences in you, in Ian, are in play when you are in this very complicated, diverse process of analyzing, relationship building, trust building, keeping back an eagerness to figure out and decide, but staying in the not knowing position? What personal competences does that call for, and what is it in you that make you capable in that process?
I think, and it's not just terminology, I try and avoid leadership buzzwords, etc. I'm not going to, but I think, I hope anyway, that genuinely, I do recognize that the value of the output is based upon the team's input. So I am entirely dependent on a team, even if I have my own assumptions and my own, even if I've seen the exact same incident somewhere else, the team need to be engaged and the team need to understand that I'm entirely dependent upon them, actually. So there's a humility or humbleness aspect there. Yeah.
Do you think that's a key strength in you, that you are not ego-driven, you have some kind of a basic humbleness and humility?
Even if I'm absolutely convinced on the particular issue, I will still ask the team to disprove it, or I'll still ask the team their perspective to disprove it, and I'm willing to change, you know, but I don't visibly make my assumptions I don't make my assumptions visible.
No, you're not to influence.
So from a team's perspective, they recognize that that they are holding often the expertise. And even when it comes to behavioral aspects, you know, you can get real good, worthwhile experience from these experts when they were previously in the field, and, you know, why it was difficult for them to do X, Y, or Z. So it's picking up these little bits. And for me, it's, as I say, that the period of discomfort is in that loose phase where it's loose links. And that's what you need to have a degree of comfort with, actually, and understand that it's part of the process, because that's where everything is on the plate in that phase, and it's what you choose to further inquire, or it's what you choose to extract, or what you choose to take as causal. It's more about me self-challenging and being comfortable with the with the early chaos, really. You do get a degree of confidence as the investigation proceeds. Ironically, or paradoxically, the analysis phase, which is at the end, is usually the most structured and definitive. But So you're knowing, you know, you've worked out what's happened. You've got an idea of why. But the real value is in determining what you do about it, what you recommend. And that's where the context comes in. I mean, I could give you, you know, I could give you a textbook on a given process. We use many processes just to show that it's demonstrably systematic, but total reliance on that, you know, being an effective investigator goes beyond the process, the book you're reading, some old process.
But the big difference, isn't it, that you never know 1 month from now, you don't know where you are and with whom you are and what issue you're going to investigate.
That's true.
From leading a platform and most people's normal job situations, there's a huge variety.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So, but in a micro sense, that's the same with daily operations as well. In a micro sense, this is in a broader sense. It's unknowing, that uncertainty of what's next, but. The real aspect of the whole end-to-end process, the real challenge is in organizational learning, and it's a term that I don't necessarily like so much. It's a term that we all understand in various organizations. Is you know, how do we not just explicitly share the experience? How do we ensure that the organization remembers it? And let's not forget that. No matter how many, whether it's 10 people in your organization or 30,000, mm-hmm. Those people are continually changing and turning over. So the perception, the usual perception is, oh, well, we will build a procedure. To think that just rewriting a paragraph in a procedure is going to prevent it reoccurring is often a mistake. So it's how we have the rest of the organization learn from it.
Yes.
And for my view, the learning, you know, you know better than I, the Noel Brooks model of learning or competence, four steps, you know, the ignorance, awareness, application and expertise, so that the unconscious incompetence to the conscious incompetent when you realize you don't know something. That model is very true, but it's, in my view, it's also very much based on the individual. So how do we get the organization to come to the conclusion that we need to learn something rather than just giving a lesson? So that awareness phase is the real challenge in organizational terms for me. And if I had the answer, you know, if I had a packaged answer for that, I'd be doing different things entirely. But I think the trick to disseminating the learning and sharing it,
yes,
lies in that topic. People need to conclude the same thing rather than just be told it. Yeah. And the trick really is for local managers when developing the learning packs, is having that degree of openness in the room where you can let people come to the conclusion without telling.
Yes.
I think that step two of that four-step model is really key in terms of embedding memory in the organization.
Embedding memory and also not falling into the pitfall of thinking that everybody is at the same page.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the only thing you can guarantee is that everybody's on a different page.
Yes.
Or at least a different paragraph on the same page. You know, it's the only thing you can be sure of. Yes, right? So even if you have a magic wand and you can immediately get the organizational awareness and memory, it will change next week. It's good when you see the recommendations really turned into the actions that you hope for and the organization accept it. But the end result, I'm still driven by giving ourselves best chance to prevent recurrence. You really need to question yourself all the time, and I think that's where, you know, people use generic terms about what's good leadership. Everyone says integrity, right? And And it's true. But what's the context? The context is, in part of the context is in quality of direction, support to the team, and knowledge of the fact that if it turns out that the direction is not perfectly optimal, that the blame won't go down to the team, and it's the output of the same process. You've got to substantiate everything you do. You've got to give yourself time to think, actually, before making the decisions. It means that you're happy to defend it, and you've got the right context for changing direction when you need to. But young leaders often fall into the trap of shooting from the hip with 10 decisions in every meeting, and then being dismissive of the subsequent failure. Well, the advice I would give is make sure that every decision or direction you offer is defensible to yourself. So you can defend it in every aspect of it, which means that you need to consider every aspect when you make the call. Because if you're expecting your direct reports to take the blame for a bad direction, then you're not being a leader. You're visibly leading, but you're not effectively leading.
Have you are working so much in an international context, have you noticed cultural differences in that approach being?
Yeah. You see big differences in some organizations or elements of it that are extremely hierarchical. Mm-hmm. And it's top down in every way, and not always is good. and it's you see very strong compliance mindsets without the space to challenge up. And consequently, you see very flat structures which are collective. I also witnessed the just as much challenge, just as many challenges that come from an overly collective approach. So you can fall into the trap of you can fall into the trap of looking for consensus forever, and actually you end up with the worst kind of compromise. So, you know, there's a balance to strike, and that's where it's the individual aspects that matter in leadership.
You could talk about maybe a bit of the perceived trade-off some see between investing a lot in health and safety and financial performance.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could reflect on various, not just in my current role, but in my operational background as well. I could easily reflect on various incidents and events. Let's think about a turnaround or a major shutdown or something. And the major shutdown is supremely efficient. It meets all its objectives, or most of its objectives, and it comes in on cost and on time, and the facility or the unit restarts, etc. After the event, you'll talk about that success, but you'll only remember the guy who hurt himself. If there's one significant injury, that's what that whole project will be remembered for. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you're looking at in business terms as well, there are many examples where reputation is really, really threatened, and local future business is really impacted by safety performance. So the interesting thing is, it's not, and people think it is, but it's not a directly comparable measure. So putting dollars on HSE investment doesn't directly translate to dollars of capex in a business. So you know, we're forever looking for this seesaw of of ops versus safety or cost versus spend, etc. And it's the wrong way to look at it. It's entirely the wrong way to look at it. The right investment is a necessity. One thing we shouldn't do as managers is consider that just take the view that the more we spend, the safer we'll be. That's not the case either. It's got to really be addressing the right topics.
Do you always find satisfactory answers to your inquiries, to your investigations? Do you always get to the end of it?
I guess it comes back to a previous discussion on things like time constraints. You'd set a limit to conclude and feed up to senior management. But to me, it's the correct outcome that governs when it's done, rather than the number of weeks that the terms of reference suggests. So I would typically, yes, okay, it might involve some remanaging some upward expectations, but I would typically hold out until the team is satisfied that we have conclusion. Back to your question, are you always happy with the outcome? The answer is I'm always satisfied with as far as we can go at the moment. Right. But actually, when I conclude the report, it doesn't mean that it's actually necessarily finished. For instance, I've recently concluded an analysis and a report, and another potential causal factor has come to mind. So there's follow-up as well. So just to make sure that the recommendations we previously made include this potential. So,
interesting.
Yeah. And a big part of the role we haven't really discussed on is in the wider sense of learning from incidents, not just the high severity items that me and my colleagues would lead on, but some of the lower level things. I'm actually just as driven by low severity repeat events than the high potential events. So understanding how to get the message across or support the learning, it's much more than just sharing a document. So that's the challenge.
Right. Since you know of what's happening also in the market, I assume in terms of trends and new technologies, are there, or do you see technologies coming or already there, but let's say recent technologies that really significantly change the game for health and safety and maybe even further into the operations, as you said, since it's very deeply connected?
Yeah, so in terms of health and safety per se, on a site-by-site operational level, I know there are aspects of the company that are looking for, how AI, for example, can help with some of the not just reporting, but some of the recognition of trends and common factors, etc. Well, my experience that I know today would suggest that's not currently so well developed, and I think it's aspirational, which is great. Ultimately, it's people who deliver the performance. So my focus remains firmly on that, on people and how they can be supported and understanding. It's easy to think about this role as identifying who's made a mistake or gone wrong or had the wrong behavior.
Right.
I don't see that. Every behavior we experience is an output of something we do. So I'm much more driven by the management system or the local leadership or company leadership if necessary. So, I work on the maxim that we get exactly what we ask for. It's a healthy starting point because it makes you interrogate from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. We investigate in different regions, and local legislators and local laws vary. Mm-hmm. And in some areas, a police investigation will take primacy and they need to conclude before you're given access, for example, can be the case. And it's interesting to see how the people you engage with, you know, what their position is after, for example, a police investigation or a regulator's investigation, where the purpose of that is punitive, is to understand who broke the law, and who's responsible. Whereas our purpose genuinely is preventing recurrence and learning from.
Right.
So when I go to some regions, I could quote them, I won't, but some regions that where my investigation has followed a local police investigation, you do sense that the people that you need to speak to are already a little bit jaded and defensive because they've just been through quite a difficult punitive investigation. And we, you know, it's not uncommon for us to find a different set of root causes.
It's so interesting to listen to a person, a man, being in such a level of complexity and talking about it in such a calm way, with overview, with passion, with mission. Not in one moment I got a sense that, oh, it could be too much or enough. He's comfortable in what he's doing. And I guess that's why people have to be very reaffirmed and confirmed that he's doing the job. So he says, I'm not sure I'm seen as a team player. I noticed that. He said that, and I said, well, he's in the middle of all the processes involving all human beings and all, and he mentioned psychology several times. Well, so I tried to find another phrase, not a team player, but he sounds like a humanistic problem solver. Mm-hmm. Because he is capable, I wrote here, he's capable of navigating in one of the most complex work context on the planet, as I see it, safety first. It's so complex, and he's capable. So he might not be a team player, but he knows how to play the right processes at the right moment in so many different contexts. So he's good at reading the situation and the complexity. I got the idea that he loved complexity. How else could he be in such a job? And then he was not sure that he did. Then I got another hypothesis. It is, he doesn't love complexity. He loves to create clarity. He loves to transform complexity into clarity, into safety. And that's why he's so motivated to be in this. And he, as he said, he doesn't know what is happening in 1 week from now. And his mission is to create more and more and more clarity in order to make the right decisions. What a mission. Yeah. So he's using his brain very he's everywhere in his brain, using all the processes, the relationship, the emotional intelligence, the analytical, the cognitive, the overview, the details. He's everywhere all the time, using his brain very actively, brain jogging almost. Okay. He also talked about being dependent on the team. And I noticed, you know, he doesn't come across as ego-driven, but he has to be self-assured, or else he couldn't deal with such a job. So I see him as a very beautiful combination of humility and self-confidence. He knows when to kind of step in and out of what kind of mental approach.